Hello and welcome to Avio's Journey Podcast. My name is Anthony Pica. This show is all about helping the new and upcoming voiceover artists grow their business and sidestep all the crazy things that I seem to step on. Today on episode number 207, we have none other than J. Michael Collins, an interview with the man, and I want to thank him very much for his time and knowledge. Not only did we have an incredible conversation with about all sorts of stuff and voiceover, but I think you're really going to love his thoughts on what he would do if he started over from scratch in voiceover today. And I love it. You know, I'm taking notes. Everything we can do from this guy, I think you're going to love. All right, well, let's do it.
This is VO's Journey. With your host, the incomparable Anthony Pica.
All right. Well, welcome to Avio's Journey Podcast. I am beyond excited and honored to be speaking with none only than the man, J. Michael Collins. Thank you so much, sir, for being on our podcast today. Thank you. Welcome.
It's a pleasure. Glad to join you.
I've been following you since I started in voiceover years ago, and it's been an amazing thing to just see the work, even by going and just watching the things that you've done. And watching the people you've helped and how you've helped the industry, I want to thank you for starters, and I think it's really awesome. And again, I'm really excited that you're here with us. So,
well, I appreciate that, and it's been interesting kind of watching you develop as well and seeing what you've done with the VO's journey, and it's neat to be in that group and see all the action in there.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. And thank you for being a part of the group. So let's go ahead and dive in. I'd love to start by asking, you know, hey, how did you get started in this crazy business of voiceover?
Well, I've got probably a less traditional story than what people do these days, I think, in that I lucked into a radio internship when I was 15 years old by sheer nepotism, and that turned into a radio show later in my 15th year of life, which led to me starting to do spots for station sponsors, and they weren't paying me anything to do the show because basically I was a friend of the station. Owner, I was just getting peanuts, but the station sponsors were hiring me to do commercials, and you know, at 15 years old, all of a sudden, I'm making $150, $250, $500 for a spot. And in the 90s, you know, as a 15 year old kid, it's pretty good money. I'm like, all right, this is really cool, right? And so my short little 4 year radio career, which was over before I was 20 years old, led to all of a sudden me doing a considerable amount of commercial work and getting my first agent. And next thing you know, by the time I graduated college, I was making a living doing this. And I mean, a modest living, but I was making a living, and I had a chance to go to law school, and my family thought I was insane. And I said, you know, I'm going to defer it for a year and see if I can continue to make this work. And like, you know what, this is what I want to do. And so, it's, I think most people these days are coming from a different career. But I got into this when I was a kid.
That's amazing. And it's so cool because I know, like you said, a lot of us now are coming from a different career, but that is awesome that you got to start so early with that. So tell us a little bit more about, because I know that so many of my listeners know who you are, but there probably will be some who might not know who you are. And maybe if you could tell us just a little bit about some of the work that you do and just a little bit more about, you know, your business in VO.
What's the old story about the guy who goes up to the ticket agent at the airline desk and goes, "Do you know who I am?" And she gets on the PA and goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, we have somebody here in the gate area who doesn't know who he is. If you know this man's identity, please see the agent." So I won't be a DWKIA. Do you know who I am? But no, look, I this is all I've ever done. I do a lot of commercial work. Some of it's high profile, some of it you've never heard of. I do quite a lot of corporate narration, e-learning, explainer, medical narration, stuff that isn't as glamorous and that we don't see as often. I occasionally get to do, I've got a cool video game trailer that's coming out soon that I actually can't talk about other than to say I've got a cool video game trailer that's coming out soon. I do stuff like that from time to time. I do the occasional gaming role, but it's not bread and butter, the occasional TV narration, promo, imaging, that kind of stuff. But core for me tends to be commercial and non-broadcast narration these days, more than anything. And, as I think a lot of people know, I coach and produce demos as well, and we run retreats and events and a variety of different things. And this is, I live and breathe this business, and it's what I do. It's all I've ever done. It's a passion, and it's what I do from the moment I wake up every day until the moment I go to bed. Literally.
and that's evident, right? I mean, you're really everywhere. And so with that being said, I think it goes perfectly ties into the next question, which is, the market today. I mean, so many amazing things are happening with voiceover. I mean, just with industry, with technology and the home studio. And of course, we went through a tough time last year with COVID and trying to come out of it in studios and everything. So with all that being said, and what you were just talking about, where do you see the direction of the market headed right now? A lot of, and where's the work from your point of view?
Yeah, I'm optimistic, and I think that there are a lot of people who poor mouth the industry and, say there's too much competition or too many people or, prices are going down in some areas. Well, there's some truth to that, but, at the end of the day, the cool thing about the voiceover, we're the only part of the entertainment industry that grew in 2020. That's insane.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, and some people have heard me say this before, but it bears repeating. Last March, if you had put a document in front of me and said, sign here and we'll give you 75% of your 2019 income, I would have signed and I would have run. And I thought, I was terrified. It's the first time in 25 years I've been scared for what was going to happen to this business. And then I had my best year by July. It's insane what happened during one of the darkest times in the history of the world to our business that we're continuing to grow. So, if that's not a sign that we're going to have a strong future, at least in the short term, I don't know what is. What I'm seeing in terms of trends, I think that commercial is one of the more interesting parts of the business because it is very competitive. There are a lot of people playing in commercial, but there's more work than there's ever been before. It's expanding. Right. We've got all this new media. Streaming media, micro-targeted advertising, and it's just growing and growing and growing. So while there are a lot of people playing, there's more work, and I think there's still a lot of pie to go around there. Non-broadcast, you can kind of start with Explainer as being maybe the closest to commercial in terms of work versus competition and versus pay, and then as you climb up the complexity ladder through corporate narration probably represents half of the paid work in the industry. It's a hugely broad field. And then we get into e-learning and medical. And by the time you get into e-learning and medical, not only do they pay incredibly well, often $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 per finished hour or even more when you get into medical in some cases, but the barrier to entry there is pretty high. You've got to have a brain. You've got to have stamina. You've got to be able to sustain reads. And you've got to be able to deliver on a deadline lots and lots of content, which means that there aren't that many people playing. Medical narration, you can write your own ticket. Because there's so much work out there, especially with this crisis. It's tripled in the last year, and there just aren't that many talent who can handle it. Video games and animation continuing to grow. I'm not a huge fan of the pay in video games, but that's going to continue to expand. Animation's going to continue to grow. Pay there is pretty good. The areas that might be on the edge a little bit, imaging, TV network promo over time, movie trailers and not in great shape for a lot of different reasons. Video game trailer has kind of become the new movie trailer in a lot of ways. I think TV narration, documentary will stay steady. There's always going to be an appetite for that. It's telephony will always kind of be there, although some of that may go to AI. But it's an interesting time to be in the business. I think if you are planning your career intelligently right now, that you can have a pretty bright future.
No, great. And with that, I think you kind of talked and touched on the next one, which is opportunities, is definitely, just real quick on the other side, I agree with you about 2020. I mean, that was, my business doubled in 2020, which just, you know, like blows you right. Cause I mean, the rest of the industry, performance industry, was decimated. It really was. So, I mean, it really is amazing. And corporate narration does seem to be everywhere. And there's going to be more and more training with everything going on, just more and more training. And I will say the, just going off of the medical narration real quick, and I don't mean to deviate from the, our questions, but I did want to touch on that a little bit more because, I'm right there with you, but me personally, for example, I suck at medical vocabulary. So like, you know, and I think that's why, you know, a lot of people who are good at it, or if you're good at it, I mean, it really makes a massive difference because not everybody can just step up to the mic and say those words convincingly. So what would you say if someone wants to get into medical narration, you know, what would be a good path for them, but they may not be as good with vocabulary? I guess my question to you is have you ever worked with someone and kind of helped them through? Is there like a quick tips, you know, hey, do this, do that, you know, get a medical book and start learning vocabulary? Like what, you know,
what do you think? I'm probably going to give a slightly less encouraging answer on that, okay. Which is that, unfortunately, I think you do have to have some sort of facility with that language naturally in order to do medical narration well. Now, that doesn't mean that if you don't, that you can't do things like OSHA training and, you know, best practices and safety and hygiene and things like that. That's going to be a little bit more straightforward. But if we're talking about, you know, actually doing journal content or really heavy in-depth training for surgeons or something like that, or, you know, complex drug names that have been on the market for a long time, there's an assumed level of knowledge on the part of the buyer with regard to the voice talent in those genres. And the content is often so long and so complex that if you don't at least have a basic facility and comfort level with that language, it gets to the point where even though it can pay very, very well, the amount of time you spend on it may actually wind up taking it down to audiobook rates by the time you're done with it. Okay, so... Now, it doesn't mean you have to have a PhD or be a doctor or even be a clinician. I'm not a clinician, but I did grow up with a mother who was a registered nurse who used to run a couple of nursing homes in New Jersey. Oh, wow. Used to hear her talk about this every day. I took Latin in high school. I took Latin in college. And because of that, I can look at this stuff, and even if I don't know what it means offhand, I can generally make sense of it, or with a little bit of a recourse to Webster's, I can find out enough that I need to in order to sound competent. But yeah. I think there does need to be some basic comfort with it, and if you're incredibly intimidated by it, and it, look, I know guys out in L.A. making $1 million a year who would not touch medical with a 10-foot pole, okay? Yeah. So it's not for everybody.
No, I agree. Now, this next question, and I want you, please feel free. We've got time to go into this as much as possible. And it's always an interesting one. And that is, you know, if you today, right now, today, you had to start over from scratch, you know, you didn't have the connections or the people you knew, and you had to start with nothing. You know, run us through, and I think it's very interesting to the audience, right? Run us through what you know, what direction would you take? How would you go about growing a voiceover business right now in 2021?
Sure. What I always tell new talent is right now there are basically six ways you make money in voiceover, okay? The first kind of the holy grail for a lot of talent is talent agents. And that usually is not realistic in the first year of your career, okay? There are some small market agencies where if you've got great demos, sometimes the demos alone can be enough to get signed. But most of them, even the small market ones, your demos, they're going to want a little bit of a resume, at least to where you can say recent clients include .... 7, 8, 9 with a couple of brand names, hopefully, to show them that you're a working talent. 25 years ago, agents, it was like baseball. Agents would take a prospect and hold your hand and help you grow your career. They don't do that anymore. They need to know that you can book right now. They don't have time for that because a lot of their business has been whittled away by new ways of casting. So talent agents, holy grail for a lot of people, but that probably is a year year, 6 months to a year down the road for small market regional ones, 3-4 years down the road if you're looking to do major union coastal agencies at a minimum in many cases. I have seen some talent do it faster, but those are usually the exceptions. But agents should be a part of that mix, but it's more of a short to medium term if you're just starting out. Then we're going to look at some marketing elements. So this assumes that you've got some proper demos. You're going to look at production companies and ad agencies. Production companies and ad agencies primarily are going to be interested in your broadcast demos, particularly commercial, but they will be interested in corporate and explainer as well because they do cast some of that content. So you're going to want to try to market to get onto as many of those rosters as you possibly can. And the cool thing about production companies and ad agencies is that they often keep a relatively small roster. So your percentage of booking with them, even though they don't cast as frequently as a talent agent or a pay-to-play might, your percentage rate on auditions on production companies and ad agencies tends to be a bit higher. I hit maybe like 25% of my auditions through those sources, which compared to other sources is a pretty high number. Direct marketing for non-broadcast narration. So there we're talking about marketing to content aggregators, to e-learning development companies, companies that put together e-learning courses for third parties, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, of those out there. Companies that strictly do explainer videos, that's the only reason they exist, to Explainify, Switch Video, Soundbite, there are a bunch of them out there that you market to directly, get onto their rosters, they start sending you auditions, and you have the chance to book, or occasionally they even book you directly. Then, of course, there's pay-to-play. I skipped over direct marketing actually to end users, to buyers. And so for corporate and explainer, you can actually cold email, cold call if you want, and go directly to companies. I tend to like, for corporate and explainers, mid-caps. I don't like mom-and-pops because they typically don't have the budget for pro VO. I don't love Fortune 100s because they typically already have an ad agency or another source that they use, and they're going to tell you to go there or to get lost. But those companies that have 50 to 500 employees, maybe a market cap of $50 to $500 million, something like that, those are ones you go on their site, you find their videos, and you can check if they've got great Pro VO on there already. Maybe not the one to market to. Maybe they've already got their resources and their ducks in a row. Can't hurt to try, but you might get more no's from them. But if you see that they have no VO or they've got Gary from accounting doing the VO, okay, there's your opportunity to say, here, I've got something that would add value and potentially help you with your ROI and your conversions on your site. E-learning, a little bit of a different story. E-learning and medical in some cases. There you can climb higher up the food chain. You can go to bigger corporations. You can go to major educational institutions. You can go to major governmental organizations because you'd be shocked. Some of them have their ducks in a row, but you'd be shocked how many don't. You could go to a Fortune 50 company sometimes and they literally have no VO on their e-learning or they've got somebody in-house doing it because they just don't know Pro VO is a thing for e-learning. So you can have a little more success marketing directly that way. Pay-to-play online casting sites, you've got multiple tiers of those. There are a lot of people who hate on them. I'm not one of the people who hates on them. I've made a lot of money off of pay-to-play over the years. I think if they're used wisely and with integrity, that you can do pretty well there. And I do think that for newer talent, generally speaking, they should be a part of your mix. It shouldn't be the only thing you rely on. If it is, you're creating a danger for yourself, but that should be part of your mix. One of the things that is extremely important right now is your website and SEO. There's something happening right now that I refer to as the second casting revolution. The first casting revolution was the pay-to-play sites. Okay, 15 years ago, they came out and they heavily disrupted the industry and they changed the way that a lot of people hire. What's happening now is that you have an influx of younger buyers in the industry, 25s to 35s, who are now in a position to cast. And what they're doing is they're not going back to the agents and the casting directors because they're the on-demand generation. They don't want to wait, okay? But they're also looking at Voices.com and Voice123 and going, well, that's gig economy, VO. That's Lyft, that's Uber. And these are people who, 25s to 35s, they tend to be pretty progressive, pretty fair trade. They've been shat on, pardon my language, by gig economy companies. They've worked for delivery services that take 30% of the principal, right? They don't like the idea of a middleman. And so what they're doing is they are curating talent directly through web search and specifically targeted web search. You're never going to get to page one on Hire Commercial Voice Actor. Right. Too too many people are paying for that, okay? But getting to page one on hire big ironic announcer guy, commercial voice actor, male, 50s, you know, that's more targeted, right? You can pop. Right. I just searched, if you guys search corporate narration, see where I pop up. I was a little disappointed to find myself closer to the bottom of page one. I'm usually page one, or I'm usually one or two on top, but I was five or six today. I was showing that to somebody else. If you target something specific, you can pop up relatively early on page one, and you'll get walk-in business. So
I didn't mean to cut you off. You're absolutely right. I had to agree with you. I think the biggest thing right now, and I've been trying to do this more and more with people, is really pushing towards focusing on our own websites. Because I think that is exactly what you said. I mean, that is where people want to go now, as opposed to wading through a lot of the craziness out there as well.
We want the middleman out.
Right, and I do think a lot of people, though, are, and I wanted to ask you this. I think a lot of people maybe even underestimate, though, how much it takes to put a website together like that. Like, if we go to your website, you know what I mean, and even at VOsJourney.com, if you go to your website, I mean, you know, this is a website that is really built out well, and a lot of content there. So maybe since we kind of talked about it, and I don't mean to cut you off, it was yes something sure, else, no. But with the website and your website and stuff, I mean, talk to us a little bit about, you know, your progression with that, if there's strategies there, like, are you booking business through your website? Because I think a lot of times, especially people coming into the business, they know they should get a website, but then they don't know, you know, am I ever going to actually get business through my website? Is this just a calling card that I have, you know? So talk to us a little bit about that, because I know there are some people that are getting lots of work through their website.
Right. Well, and I think the most important thing I can say on this is work with professionals, okay? I put my first website together 17, 18 years ago, something like that. And I had a team do that for me at the time. I had one guy who kind of came on board afterwards who sort of ran it for me for about 10 years. He was an expert, did great, got my Google Authority score up, got my SEO up. And then about 4 years or 5 years ago, he went on to bigger and better things, and I hired Joe Davis and Karen Barth from voiceactorwebsites.com to take over, and they did a whole rebuild of my site to what it looks like today, and we've continued to add on to that. But what they do and what pros do, and whether you use them or somebody else, that's up to you. I've enjoyed working with them. But what pros do is they understand SEO. They understand how to create backlinks, how to go out and get high authority score domain backlinks, backlinks that actually have a do follow, not a no follow. They understand how to connect your site to other resources that Google is going to then interpret as you being an authority in what you do. And they've gotten my Google authority score up to 34, which for an individual voice actor website is enormous. If you put it in context, voices.com is 77. Okay, so for an individual voice actor to have an authority score half essentially of voices.com's, that's hard to do. And part of that is having a big site. Google does. In the past, Google used to favor streamlined sites. That's not what happens anymore. Now, Google likes content, and it needs to change. You need to have a blog. You need to be constantly putting new stuff on there so that Google continues to believe that you're interesting and that you're offering something of value. But I think your biggest question was, do I book? Yes, I book. The biggest difference to me that illustrates the curator revolution, if you will, of these people who are casting through web search is that 5 years ago, I still had a pretty, I mean, I was probably, I don't know, maybe a 27 or 28 authority score. I still had a pretty powerful site. But I only booked maybe one or two walk-ins a week through that. Now I book probably two a day. Okay, that just come in right through my website, and they tend to be pretty solid clients. In the past couple of years, I've booked national TV for British Airways, for Universal Orlando, for Wendy's, national in-show narration for MTV. Just walking through my website, they tend to pay fairly because that's their mindset. Again, it tends to be younger people who do that, and it's just the easiest way to book work. It's the spider web that brings in the flies.
This kind of stuff that excites me so much, just because I think that is, I really do believe that's the future. That's what we would all, at least for me, I would feel like we would all want, right? Yeah. Is for us to be able to get our own work through our own website. Talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on, you know, like, if someone was like, okay, I'm listening to Jay saying we need, you know, I need to get my website and I really need to get it up and running. What are some thoughts in your mind? You talked about your do follows or no follows. We talked about authority score. And I have to tell you, and I know you work with a lot of voice actors. I work with a lot of voice actors who that's not even a part of their vocabulary. And right. I wouldn't have known those things unless, you know, I actually have trying to do the same thing and on the back end and learning all the SEO stuff. So what would your advice be I guess you've already said work with professionals, but what do you think you should have on your website? You talked a little bit about us, kind of run us through maybe, you know, what are some thoughts about what you need? Like, what are people saying to you when they come to your website?
Well, and I do go back to working with pros because I'm really just parroting what I'm told by the people who work for me. I'm a layman when it comes to this, which is why I hire pros. But, I mean, what I'm told consistently is content, content, content. And relevant content, but lots of it. I put up recently a guide to coaching, a guide to demo production. Every demo that I've got, my personal demos on that site, has a page attached to it with multiple paragraphs of content about that genre, what you should listen for, what a buyer should be looking for. And bottom line is nobody's going to read that, right? Nobody's going to read that. That's for Google, okay? But it looks professional, it sounds good, and it's meant to just, again, demonstrate to Google's, you know, insane AI that my site is relevant and that my site has something to offer the industry, and that's where the authority, that and the backlinks, of course, is what drives that.
No, I love that. Thank you so much. And that is, again, and everybody listening, I can't agree with you more. That is so vital now today more than ever, is to get a website, but not just everybody, you know, a lot of people have a website, but put some effort into building online, you know, I call it our online brick and mortar store. You know, I mean, it's got to look good on the outside. It's got to look good on the inside and have some meat to it. So, no, that's great. Okay, so we talked about all those. Was there anything else?
There was one more, and that's something we haven't been able to do for the last year, but that's going to change pretty soon. Get out and meet people live in this industry. Go to conferences, go to meetups, go to improv, whatever it may be, something in your area, something nationally. The first live voiceover conference back is going to be the One Voice Conference in Dallas at the end of August. We're going to be there, and full disclosure, I'm affiliated with that, but we're going to be there in person, in the flesh, 200-300 people, hopefully, no masks, having fun. Hopefully most people have their shots. right. If everything goes to plan. But get out, you know, That's VoiceOver might have an in-person component in New York this year. We'll see. I think Rudy's still deciding on that. Next year when VO Atlanta comes around again, that'll be live. I think everything next year will be live. Yeah. The reason I say that you should do this, it isn't because you need to make friends with the casting directors and the agents and the bigwigs. That doesn't hurt, okay? But at the end of the day, by the way, little pro tip, okay? Because people know that I cast, and so just like casting directors and agents, I get 435,000 business cards at every conference that I go to. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I love you guys, but they stay in the room when I leave.
Right.
Okay. None of us take them with us and itemize them because we don't have time for that. So if you're the reason that these conferences and other meetups are so valuable, though, is because you're going to make friends of your fellow talent. And we hire each other all the time. I hire my friends 2-3 times a week. My friends hire me 2-3 times a week. We pass work around like candy. And the more friends you have in this business, the more work is going to follow you.
Right. No, wow. No, that's great. And as I said, just because that was one of the kind of questions we had. But I do want to move on to that next part of that, which is, what do you see for studios? So, you know, a lot of, unfortunately, you know, I know a lot of them closed down. A lot of them are just gone after this past year. And I know we've seen the rise of the home studio. I mean, like crazy. So do you see, studios, in-person studios making a comeback, or do you think that that's just going to continue to go down the path where the home studio is now just it?
I'm going to split the baby a little bit. I think the home studio already is and will continue to be dominant, and I don't think that that's going to change. But I don't think professional storefront studios will disappear entirely. Part of the reason for that is there are some genres, particularly animation, particularly, you know, TV narration on the coasts, some promos still, that once you're there, they want you there physically. And, you know, I know a lot of I'm very good friends with a lot of the real top agents out there, and you know, sometimes they'll nice mouth, you know, it's okay if you want to do animation and you're in Iowa, but behind the scenes, most of them are saying, no, as soon as we can open all these studios back up, you're coming to LA or you're not going to play. right. So, at the end of the day, there's still going to be that, but I do think that it will probably be reduced and the home studio will continue to dominate.
Okay, cool. So just real quick to go back to that last question. So out of the six things that you mentioned, which one would you so you did say you would start at pay to play. And then from there, where would you go?
Well, I think the two most important are, well, let me just make it a little more general. I think the most important thing you can do in this business, whether it's earlier in your career or late in your career, is get your voice in front of potential buyers, okay? And so for me, that means two things. It means auditions through whatever sources you can find them, active jobs that are looking to hire, okay? And then getting your demo in front of as many people who are potentially interested in hiring as possible. So to me, that means, you know, if you've got agency rep, great. So you're doing those auditions. If you're in with production companies and ad agencies, great. You're doing those auditions. Certainly it means pay to play for a lot of talent. And then it means marketing and getting your demos out there into the hands of people who are going to be interested potentially in becoming a client for you. All the branding, marketing, social media, everything, it's valuable. Okay. Nobody should ever poor mouth that stuff. But the bottom line is you can cut all the fluff away. The more ears on your voice, the more work you book. Simple.
Oh, I love that. I have to ask because it's on everybody's minds, and you did mention it a little bit ago, AI. What are your thoughts on AI? What are you seeing, you know, and there's a lot of people who are really freaked out about it. What are your thoughts on AI?
Some people aren't going to love what I have to say on this. Some people, I think, will be heartened by it. I think if I were doing e-learning for 3 cents a word on low-cost platforms, I'd be pretty damn scared right now. I think it's going to fairly ravage the low end of the industry because there are buyers out there that will trade you in a heartbeat for, if they're paying you 3 cents per word, for 0.0003 cents per word. And I don't think anybody realizes just how low budget these AI companies are setting their rates, okay? It is not just pennies, it's fractions of pennies on the dollar. So there are clients out there where quality is not the driver and price is the driver that are going to abandon human voice actors, and I don't think there's any getting away from that. I do think there are probably places in the middle of the market, and maybe one or two places in the high end of the market it may impact as well. You may see it used in tags and calls to action, certainly like phone number reads at the end of, I don't know if you guys have ever seen these Relaxium spots that are out there. They're kind of everywhere, but those are me. And every time I get that spot, it's a core spot, and then I do like 275 phone numbers, okay? At some point, they're going to take a robot to do that, and that's going to go away. I might still do the core read, but all those little tags I'm getting extra for, those are going to go away. The interesting thing with AI is that it doesn't hold up very well over time. And I've actually been on the inside of a couple of these organizations and have listened to this, and, you know, it can go for 30 seconds and make you believe it's real. It can maybe go for a minute. I don't know about, it's certainly not going to move into high-end e-learning or medical, in my opinion, because it can't sustain it for 5 minutes. It can't sustain it for an hour, okay? It's going to sound fake. And high-end clients, no. I do believe that low-budget work is really going to take a hit from this. I think the middle of the market is going to take a hit, but it'll be a partial hit. And I think the high-end of the market is pretty safe. I'll use an example. I do e-learning for a defense contractor. One of the things I teach for them is ethics compliance for expatriate employees, how not to take bribes and things like that, right? Mm-hmm. I jokingly chatted with my contact there at one point, and they pay me low five figures a year. They pay about 25 cents a word to do that. And I said, well, you're going to replace me with a robot at some point, right? Because I'm expensive. And he said, look, he said, you have to understand, we need our employees to be as interested on page 40 as they are on page 1, because the fines if they forget prison sentences, okay, but the fines if they get caught taking a bribe or giving a bribe to a foreign official, and they didn't intend to, they just didn't know, but the fines start at like $5 million, and there are defense contracts that have been fined $250 million, $500 million for that kind of stuff. So five figures a year to make sure that our employees stay engaged, it's the best insurance policy we can buy. That's exactly what came out of his mouth. So the high end of the business, anything that involves heavy acting, okay, that's pretty safe. Here's the thing to keep in mind. There are cost conscious and cost priority buyers in every business. Mm-hmm. There are quality minded buyers in every business, and then some are kind of in the middle in every business. But the quality minded buyers, they're going to be a core of buyers in this industry that will always reflexively say, "No, I want a person. I don't want a machine." No matter how good the machine is, it's just going to be anathema to the way that they want to work. And if you've actually ever seen the interfaces of these things, it's not that easy. You've got to select this, over this section, over this timeline, over this. It's a lot of work, okay? There are, I think, younger people who hire, and, you know, video game worries me about this a little bit because I think the way that a lot of people who make video games, their minds work, this AI probably makes a little more sense to them than it does to somebody who's casting high-end national commercials. But I think that if you build your career and your business in a way that is geared towards servicing quality-minded buyers, you're safe. You know, in the near long term, 25 years from now, who knows, okay? But for the moment, I think, you know, if you've got a strong business or you're building your business on quality, you're probably okay.
Great answer. No, I do think, I think that I've heard you say that before. So I do remember you saying that before. And, you know, it is interesting to me the shift in, you know, the like just the sheer amount of even emails I get from AI companies literally just emailing me. Like, I mean, they're out there and they're trying to get business. I wanted to ask you, and this you've given us tons, but a tip, something that, you know, and it can be either way. It can be like, you know, something that, you know, you would give as a tip today to get a leg up in the market, or a tip today not to be left behind, you know, either one, you know what I mean? But something that, you know, you see going on that could really help the audience either way.
I'll give you two. So here's my core one is this. Right now, with anything that's acting-based, particularly commercial, but there are roles in e-learning, there are roles in corporate that are acting-based as well. The name of the game right now is play. It's stream of consciousness. It's being unintentional, being effortless, getting lost in copy. The stream of consciousness is actually the phrase I hear from casting directors more than anything else at the moment, which means, look, people who are hiring these days, you know, and I sit in that chair a couple of times a week for my own clients, but I don't consider myself a casting director, but I sit on that side of the glass, and I'm one of them. We're all a little ADD. We're all squirrel-brained, okay? And you need to keep us entertained, which means it needs to be moving a little bigger here. And, oh, look at that thing over there, and that's, okay, and then we finish on this note. You know, and it's got nine or ten different things going on. Now, if it's just a straight read for a bank, it might not be that wacky, but I still would like to hear the character think at some point along the way before he continues. There has to be some acting. There has to be something real in there, and it has to be very spontaneous and sound like you're not trying, even though you may very well be trying. So play. Yeah. Remember that with commercial in particular, but acting roles in general, there really aren't any rules, okay? Now, it's one thing if it's a luxury commercial, okay? Those are going to sound a certain way. You're going to stay inside the lines on those. You're going to read them the way that they're written. But if it's conversational, which is where a lot of the market is on a lot of different things right now, it's the sandbox. And what casting directors are listening for right now, and I've used this analogy a little bit recently, so apologies if it's a little redundant, but if a casting director gets 100 auditions for a commercial right now, there are going to be 9 or 10 shiny Toyotas in there. And they're great cars. They do what they're supposed to do. They're functional. You know, everything works. And they look great. 2 or 3 of those are going to go to the buyer for consideration. But every time the casting director goes, "What's that weird little car over there?" Every weird little car goes to the buyer right now. And if you've watched commercial recently, you'll notice that the trend is toward kind of awkward, weird, quirky humor that's just a little different and bizarre. We can't be bright and light. We're in the middle of a pandemic, right? So it's weird. And that's the weird little car. If you're the weird little car, you're going to book more often than if you're the shiny Toyota.
Okay, go ahead.
I was gonna, the quick number two is this, and I have a lot of other coaches who want to smack me for saying this, but if you've been beating your head against the wall trying to do this for 3 years, and you're deeply in the red, and you've had demos, and you've had coaches, and it ain't working, give some serious thought to whether or not it's going to work. Because one of the things that I don't like about the voiceover business is seeing what I call perpetual students. People who have been trying to do this for 10 years, now you see them at every conference, you see them at every meetup, and maybe they book every now and then, but they're not in the black, they're in the red. They've spent more than they've made. And look, if the market isn't giving you good signs within 2 or 3 years, that's the market telling you something. And there are exceptions to every story. I know there are people out there who have worked for 10 years and then all of a sudden they break through and they make it. It's not that it can't happen. It's just that don't fall into the trap of, you know, of being a perpetual student. Because I will tell you that the coaching industry and the demo production industry runs on the souls of people who probably don't have as much hope as they think they do. And be honest with yourself.
Wow, those are big words. Those are really big words. And I think as an actor, you know, that's something that, you know, because I got into this as a stage actor. That's what I was. And then I was a teacher. And, you know, that's a big thing in general, just about, you know, can you book business? Yeah. Or, you know, can you get it? And, you know, I've worked with a lot of people myself now. And, you know, it's always interesting to see the people that just seem to, you know, the industry picks them up. They just, it gravitates to them. And then the other people work very hard and they seem to, and again, I think you're right. It's not about giving up, but, you know, it is important to always evaluate. And maybe also it means, you know, too, I do think about doing the same thing over and over again is silly, right? Like what you were talking about acting is so important in the sense that I think a lot of people do come from, we didn't talk about what if you come from a broadcast background or what do you have, you know, you've mentioned acting so much, which I love.
And I come from a broadcast background.
Right. No, and I love that because I think the acting part, you know, especially with everything today, because I know I catch myself as an acting coach, as I mean, I've did it my whole life for the last 20 some years, coach actors on stage and now voice actors, you know, get into talking so much about the logistics of running an online business.
Right.
And like we were talking about SEO and all this stuff and the acting, you know, because I have, you know, like I have a BFA in theater and then I have an MA. So, I mean, you know, like I was trained to be an actor, but a lot of people coming now, there are a lot of more actors coming into the business because of the thing, but you know, right. I mean, a lot of people coming into the business are not trained as actors. So that's a challenge itself, you know, in the sense of just the acting part is so vital to this success. And you, it's, you know, critical. You talked about it a lot.
Yeah, I was just before talking to you, I was on a session with Joel Kershaw, who's the CEO of Sound and Fury, probably the biggest casting company in Los Angeles, and we were doing a demo review for VO Atlanta. And it's just amazing listening to her, and I know where she's going already because I know how she thinks, okay? But how anything in the demos we were listening to that struck her as big and loud, she just shut down. Immediately, just shut down. It was all smaller choices, quieter choices, acting choices that she reacted well to. And it's just where the market is right now.
I love that. That's so, and I'm glad you mentioned about the demos, because we're going to talk real quickly because we're coming up. By the way, this has been amazing. We're coming up on our time, and we're going to just talk briefly about how people can, you know, get to know more about you and learn more about what you can do to help other voice actors. But when it comes to demo, I've really, over time, learned so much from who's hired me, why they've hired me, and collecting information from those people as best I could. And I've come to feel, and you know, this is just me, but I'd love to get your thoughts on it, the importance of what you just said in a demo. I think there was a time where most people were a lot of people were focused on the production value, and that's so important. But what you're actually saying in the demo, how you're saying it, even the words that you're using, you know, I hear some people put demos together and they're amazing, but they're like, they're selling cars off a car lot and every spot on there. And I'm like, you know, I mean, I guess that that's what you're only doing, but you know, maybe talk a little bit about, expand a little bit about the demo other, like the artistic part. I'm trying to talk to people about there's a big artistic part to this demo, not just the production of it.
There is. And, you know, here's the thing. The production should be assumed. Okay, if you're going to a quality producer, you know, and there are, I don't know, about a dozen out there of us that I think people know that they can trust. But if you're going to quality producer, quality production should be an assumption. That's a given. If you're not getting that, you're already, you know, making a bad choice. So that's a given. What it comes down to, though, is content. And the content needs to first and foremost be bleeding edge relevant. Now, it doesn't mean you have to update your demo every 6 months. If you're a producer, it's great because we can do that, right? But at the end of the day, most people can. This is expensive. Demo production tends to be pretty expensive. So that's not necessarily realistic. But, you know, for broadcast genres, every couple of years, you need to be thinking about it. Non-broadcast, a good demo producer can get you a corporate e-learning medical demo that can have 4 or 5 years of legs before those industries change a little bit. But for broadcast, it's faster. But the content has to be bleeding edge. What's, you know, what I talked about with humor earlier, okay, that's a good example. Pre-pandemic, if you go back to December of 2019, what was selling was bright, perky, quirky, cute, and light, and silly humor, all right? It's still quirky, but now it's down, quiet, weird, odd, bizarre. It's a different read, okay? Mm-hmm. It's kind of cringy. It's odd. And if you've got something that sounds all bubbly and bright and silly on your demo, well, the casting director or the agent's going to go, yeah, it's kind of 3 years ago. You know, the buyer's going to go, that's not what we're doing right now, right, on our spot. So you have to have content that's relevant. The performance, that's what it's all about. It's, you know, the production, again, is a given, but you've got to find somebody who can write copy for you that's going to be relevant to what's happening right now. Bleeding edge copy, not only that the market wants, but also that you're able to perform because they know you and they're able to understand what it is you can do well and to push you, but not push you to a place where you're not going to be able to pull off the read or reproduce the read when you get out there into the wild. And you need somebody who knows how to direct. And you need somebody who understands, who has the ear to listen and say, okay, we're just going to tweak that line a little bit, or you just need to connect and be a little bit more honest and authentic and sound like you care. You need somebody who understands the nuance of every read. That's where the magic happens. That's where the art happens in the demos. It's not the whiz-bang production. We can all do that.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I always call it the story underneath the story.
Yeah,
I mean, you got to be able to tell the story underneath the story. And it's interesting because you are so right about the direction. I think a good director is, you know, and a lot of times directors can be different than acting coaches, too. But I do think that a good director can see or listen to that story, hear where those nuances are and help you do that, where, you know, that's the relationship that a lot of people we can lose in this atmosphere.
Well, I think it's important too that whoever you're choosing to do your demo, that in one way or another they are active in the genre that they are producing for you. Now that doesn't always mean that they're a voice actor, because there are great producers out there who come from the other side of the glass. Okay, but they need to be active in that side of the glass. Do we produce animation and video game demos? We do, but guess what? You will never see me during that process. My brand produces them. I've got Matt Curtis and Chris Sharps who work for me, and they write, they direct, they handle them, because they live in that world every single day, and I don't, okay? We don't do audiobook demos at all, because I don't live in that world, and I don't know enough about it to be competent in that. If I'm doing an imaging demo, AJ McKay is my co-director. I play in imaging, but AJ lives and breathes it every single day, and so he comes in, and then I do the commercial demos, I do the promo demos, I do the e-learning demos, medical, whatever it might be. Get in there with people who know the genres that they're in, and don't get somebody who's an imaging guy to do your commercial demo, because it's not going to turn out well.
Man, I love that. Thank you so much. Hey, how can people, I mean, I could talk to you all day.
I could talk all day.
We could talk. That's right.
That's my wife.
How could people, get a hold of you, learn more about the services that you offer?
So a picture of a lobster beamed into the sky. Well, usually it's like a bat signal. you can email me directly, right? Lobster man. jmichael@jmcvoiceover.com or check out jmcvoiceover.com or jmcdemos.com if you want to listen to our demo work.
That's awesome. Well, hey, thank you so much, my friend, for your time. This has been amazing. I know, again, I'm honored to have been able to speak with you today. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. I'm grateful for you having me, and thank you to everybody out there watching.
All right. Bye-bye.